She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Hi, and welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't ever tell you what to think, and we always just want you to. Thank you so much for joining us today. This show is sponsored by Chapman Tucson. My heartfelt thanks to them always and to their Going Green team for all they are doing to spread the good green word at Chapman from the inside out. Very excited to welcome our guests today. Breathlessly excited because they are going to be talking about something very near and dear to my heart. Healthy food, healthy farming, healthy eating, healthy families, you name it, healthy, healthy. I am thrilled to welcome my guest today, Regina Beidler, who's a longtime farmer owner with Organic Valley Co-op and very involved in their Farmer Ambassador Program, among other things. And Matthew and Matt, just give me, you know, the love for how I pronounce your name. And it's like Schoenway. You say
Schoenier.
Schoenier. That's not bad. I didn't do too badly.
You did good.
And you're the recipient of Annie's Sustainable Agricultural Scholarship, which was no small feat after I read your paper. And your family is a member of the Organic Valley Co-op, and you are a member of the Organic Valley's Generation Organic Program. They are the real deal, folks, and we're going to have a great show. Thank you, Regina and Matt, for being guests on the Mrs. Green's World Show. Welcome.
Thanks for having us.
And we made it all work with the magic of technology. Okay, so I just want to do a short shout-out that I do on my show every week for a great company that's making a difference for our health and the health of the planet in another arena, and that's Safe Cosmetics and skincare products. And as you both know, all of it matters. Ecobella is a partner of Mrs. Green. They're the kind of company that Matt and Regina will talk about in terms of really wondering where your products are sourced. What are you eating? What are you putting on your skin? This retailer is committed to fair trade practices, paying their suppliers equitable prices for their products, which really matters. They are indeed sustainable, naturally sourced, and most importantly, their products work. I never mind repeating this on the show because it's great to know once you vet a product like Ecobella, you don't have to worry about them. They're not ever going to trick you and test their products on animals or anything like that. It's a company you can trust. Please check them out at their website, www.ecobella.com. That's Eco with two C's, and join me in supporting companies like them for our health and for the health of the planet. Now, let's get started here with our featured guests, and I'll say it again, Regina Beidler is a longtime farmer owner for Organic Valley, and since you're so young, I think that's like a relative term. You're also the East Coast specialist in for farmers in marketing, which is a great concept we're going to talk about, and Matt, I'm not going to say your last name anymore, Matt, because it's just going to get things messed up. It'll be all over my website. You are the recipient of Annie's Sustainable Agriculture Scholarship and a member of Organics Valley Generation Program. So I've spoken to both of you before the show, which I don't do a lot because I get a lot of great information. And the challenge in this one is going to be like 5 hours of content in a 1 hour show, and there are two of you. So bear with me. And I think a good place to start, and I put a lot of thought into it, is Regina, why don't you start us off with a refresher for our listeners about exactly what the Organic Valley Co-op is and how it works?
Sure. Well, you've mentioned it's a co-op. A lot of people are surprised to find out that Organic Valley is a cooperative. It started in 1988 with seven farmers in Wisconsin, and they were tired of the ups and downs of the dairy pricing and the dairy industry and decided that they would produce certified organic food and then market it in a way that the cost reflected the price that farmers need to be paid for the production of that food. And I think when they started, I know when they started that they didn't envision where Organic Valley is today. But since that start, now we have over 1,800 family farms in our cooperative in 23 states across the country. So it's been a significant impact across the country for farmers who are wanting to remain on family farms. But we call ourselves a whole bunch of little guys working together to market our products together.
I know. I like to call it David and Goliath, especially when I think of some of the Goliaths out there that I'd like to aim the slingshot out. And I want to read a quote. When I went down to, I went down the rabbit hole for both of your families and what you're doing and looked at a lot of videos and read your stories. And Regina, there's a quote that was written on your page on the Organic Valley Co-op. Going organic was an obvious step for us when we began to develop our farm plan. This is what you said. And you were one of the first Vermont farmers to join the Organic Valley family of farms, the largest organic cooperative in the U.S. Why did you decide to become one of its first members? Was organic just a must?
It was. And I'm very fortunate to be married to a man who had a very strong vision for where he wanted us to go as a family with our farm. We had a number of different influences that brought us towards organic, some influential family members who, including an uncle who had been gone to organic dairy production prior to us, so we were able to watch that process. And also grazing, which we can certainly talk about, is a central part of what organic farmers do for their cows. Cows are on pasture this type of the year. So a lot of farmers do come to organic production because of grazing and seeing the benefits of that and then also seeing the benefits of organic production. But I have to say, when we moved to our farm 15 years ago, I had a baby. She was 3 months old, and I think as parents, a lot of times those are the things that we think about. We want to be producing food. We wanted to produce food in a way that was going to be safe for her to be with us, to be able to come along and be with us as we were working, and also the food we were feeding our family, we wanted to be produced in a way that we felt good about. So the benefit was for our family and also for other people we were producing the food for.
And then it's a perfect segue to Matt, because you are a family that chose to do it, chose to go the organic route, and are making it happen. You're also in a leadership role with the co-op. Matt, you know, I have to say this on air. You're an outstanding example to me of everything that's right with the world. You wrote a magnificent paper that took a lot of thought. It was a very contemplative, very content-rich paper. It won you a $10,000 Annie Sustainable Agriculture Scholarship. So share with us about, you really were raised on the farm and your family farm. What about your experience growing up on a farm that must have been so good that you're planning on coming back as a farmer? You're not counting the days to, you know, move to the big city.
Yeah, well, I guess growing up on a farm, it really becomes part of your lifestyle. It's really taught me a good, strong work ethic that's really helped me, like, through school, through sports, and, like, even, like, in things I do with my friends. Like, I've really learned how to work hard to get what I want and be the best that I can be. But what I really like about farming is that it's, like, you don't do the same thing twice in a day. Like, yeah, you milk cows every day, but everything's always different. Like, it's not like the 8-hour job where you go into the office and you sit down. Like, I really enjoy being outside. There's endless opportunities, too. Like, really, when you're a farmer, you're not just a farmer. You're like a jack of all trades. You really need to learn how to do a lot of things, and I enjoy that. I enjoy the challenge, I guess.
Well, I'd like to ask both of you, what do you say to people like me that would say the work is never done? I mean, the cows don't get a day off. You don't get a day off from the cows. They don't, like, stop giving milk on Sundays if you have a dairy farm and if there's things that need to be picked. I'd like to ask you both, you, Matt, as a student that has an outstanding grade point average, that took accelerated classes, that, you know, participated in sports, how do you fit farming into your everyday life, and is it as hard as people from the outside? I did not grow up on a farm. It seems to me a very, very hard life. Rewarding, but hard.
Yeah, it really was. I guess part of, like, who I am is I like to do everything. So the only way I could really be happy was if I was doing everything with my friends, but also being on the farm. And it was the toughest thing like I've ever done. Like, especially my senior year, taking as many accelerated classes as I did. I would get up in the morning, school until 3, sports until 5:30, chores until 7, then homework until 10. So really, it was extremely exhausting. But I always had to keep in mind like the rewards that were going to come from it, because I've been very blessed to get all the scholarships I've gotten because of that, I think. And also, I've made lifelong friends in the classes that I've taken. So it was definitely all worth it.
And I can tell you had some fun, because one of my favorite videos that I watched on your family page was the one where you had the different size of eggs for the chickens. And I didn't really understand, why are the healthy organic eggs so much bigger? Why are they so much bigger and don't fit in an egg crate?
Well, I think what it is since our chickens are free range, like we don't, in like a lot of factory farms, I think, like they're all about production. So once the chicken gets to a certain age, they cull it from the flock, I guess. Some of our chickens, I'm sure, we got our first batch of chickens, they started laying in 2007, and I think we still have some of those chickens, and it's those older chickens that lay the bigger eggs, I think. So I think it's definitely, as the chicken gets older, they can lay bigger eggs, but also they're free to eat whatever they want. They scratch around everywhere. It's in the barn, picking through the cow's grain, to like our lawn, my mom's flowers.
They're picking even places you don't want them to.
Oh my gosh, it's impossible to keep them out of places you don't want. That's where they like the most.
That part sounds delightful. And Regina, for you, as a mother, and balancing all of the things that Matt just said, and being responsible to make sure that the homework and the family gets done, and your role as in the organic co-op and as a farm owner, tell me about your sleeping patterns.
Absolutely. My sleeping patterns have probably gotten better the older the children get, so that's definitely a benefit. One thing that I would say, though, is that while farming hours can be quite demanding and long, there's also the benefit of if somebody stops by to visit, or if you have a chance for going somewhere to be with somebody, there is some flexibility in your schedule to be able to do that. And what we find is that not only our own family identifies strongly with the land that we live on, that by working and living here, our neighborhood also identifies with it. There was one story I tell that a family that lived down the road was coming back from their vacation, and we were bringing in the cows from pasture, and as they went by in their car, their teenager rolled down the window and yelled out, "Hello, cows, we're home." So there's a strong sense of identity, I think, for the whole neighborhood. And what's always been nice, too, for our daughter, she knows exactly what her parents do for work. When she gets off the bus in the afternoon, we're here because we're working right at the farm. So it's been a nice way to integrate children into the kind of farm life that goes on is not so difficult, and it's a nice way to be able to be together as a family.
It's so different because I grew up in New Jersey, and many, many of us had a father. In those days, mostly the moms were stay home. I was blessed to have a stay home mom. And my dad would get on the bus at 6 in the morning and come home at 6 or 6:30 at night. So there wasn't that opportunity. I mean, he was a great dad, but that experience of doing things side by side is very different than someone that has a job and has to work away from the family to earn a living. So I think it's very different. What are some of the biggest challenges to both of you? And I'm sure they're very different. Regina, you as a wife and a mother, and Matt, you as a student and a son and someone preparing for the next generation. Just name one of the challenge that continuously seems to face you, if you can grab at that one.
Well, I think it would be no surprise to realize that there's always more work in a day that can never be accomplished. So it's always a matter of prioritizing and checking everyone's schedule against everyone else's to see what the most important things are. So some things that you think should be getting done are set aside for something more important, and I think after a while you just realize that's the kind of balancing act that you have to have in order for it to work.
What about you, Matt?
I think the hardest thing would be definitely the workload. as of right now, like, this summer is the first time I've been full-time getting up with my dad in the morning and staying out with him until night. That was definitely a bit of a shell shock. I love it, but I'm exhausted.
I guess. I'm just tired listening to that. That's a long day for anybody.
I've never been more exhausted in my life, but I sleep well at night. I've never slept as good as I do now.
I bet you do. Oh, my God. That's a long day.
The long days you do get tired after a while, but also trying to fit in all the social events with my friends, my bedtime isn't even close to what it should be.
That's what I was going to say. Are you fitting in fun as a teenager? You have to be having some fun, too.
Exactly.
Okay, I would like to ask this of both of you. Regina, from your perspective in what you do with the Organic Valley Co-op, how are things trending? And two perspectives here that I thought about. One is, Regina, what are you seeing in terms of the growth of organic farms as one part of the question? And the other part, are young people like Matt typical or atypical? Are there more kids saying, this is too hard for me, I want to get out of here? Or what are some of the trends that you see as part of a bigger organization?
Sure. Well, I would say that, yes, there is an increase in the number of organic dairy farms. One thing that Organic Valley pioneered early on was only adding more farmers to our co-op as the market demanded more organic milk and more organic food. And so our co-op has grown over the years because of the increasing demand from consumers for more organic food. So what I would say is it's interesting looking at it at a state level. When we started farming here in Vermont 15 years ago on our own farm, there was about 1,800 dairy farms in Vermont, and last year it's down to about 900. So it's about half the amount of overall dairy farms from when we started 15 years ago. And then in contrast, when we started in 2000, when we finished our certification to organic, there was 47 organic dairy farms in the state, and now there's 205. So the trend has grown as far as organic dairy. And some of those, obviously, were existing farms who were farming conventionally who came to organic production. But that's been it's allowed farms of a more modest size who want to continue to stay farming to be able to do that in a way that's profitable for them. And I think if you look at the average age of farmers in the country, it's gotten older and older. And I think for some families, too, who have family members who may want to consider farming, if they don't see economic opportunity or a way to really make a living farming, it's a bit discouraging to anticipate farming. But if you have a marketplace like Organic that's willing to pay a fair pay price, I think younger people, both like Matt, who have grown up on farms and are contemplating farming themselves, or people who are new to farming are seeing an opportunity to get into farming, which is a good trend.
And Matt, this is, you know, I knew that this show would not be like an A, B, C, D, E, F, G kind of question show, because usually mine aren't anyway. But for this one, to go back and forth in the, it is somewhat multi-generational. What do you see for you as the new farmer and our friends that you go to school with? Because I know that you know Regina's family, and I think that you ran track together with her daughter. I'm not sure if I made that up, but I think I read that. So you know each other. What's going on with your generation and seeing down the road a little bit in terms of what the future is for organic farming and you and your friends?
Well, you know, like, sadly, I do have a lot of friends that have grown up on farms, and there are very few, if any, who are planning on continuing running the family farm. So I think, and a lot of them are conventional farmers, so I think from that standpoint, it's a lot more discouraging being a conventional farmer coming into it when you could be something that makes, or someone who makes so much more money than a farmer with a lot less hours. I think to be a farmer, you definitely need to have the passion for it to be worth it, because it is a lot of work. But if you love it, then it's totally worth it.
It's kind of in your blood.
Exactly. But sadly, I haven't seen many of my friends who have that in their blood.
So let's go back to you, Regina. That's a good response to the value of organic farms. And let's delve into a little bit about the conversation you and I had about, I'd love to dispel the myth that eating and buying organic is more expensive. If you go on this chicken costs this much and this chicken costs that, or this yogurt costs this, and this one costs that. Yes, it may be. But when you look at it as an overall part of your health and your budget, talk about your perspective on that a little bit.
Yeah, it's a very good conversation, and one that I hope we engage in more as a country, because I certainly can see both sides of the issue. As a farmer, we're very aware of how much it costs to produce the food that we're eating, and people are definitely making a choice when they go to the grocery store and voting with their food dollar about how they like to see their food produced and what's important to them. At the same time, we understand people's budgets and the need to economize and to be very aware of what they're spending, especially with an economic situation which for many has been really challenging. And what I have said sometimes is that I feel like too often we make it an all or nothing type of proposition, that either you have to choose to eat all organic and locally produced and bulk types of foods, or you eat none at all. But I think for a lot of people, and what we've seen for a lot of people, especially as they have children, is that they start to be more aware of, well, maybe we'll buy some organic milk, or we'll get some organic vegetables, or the farmer's market down the road, or we have a local CSA, or we grow a few plants in our own garden for some of our own eating. But there are ways to slowly add those elements in to a person's eating that start to make a difference, both in people's awareness of how food is produced and also in feeling that they're getting food in ways that they feel really positively about.
You know, in our city where Starbucks is a household word and there's one on every corner, it might be just trading some of that out. Believe it or not, you guys, I told you both separately that time would fly. We have to take our first break. And when we come back, I'd like to talk with both of you about what I call the big dogs. When someone like a Walmart or a Stonyfield comes in and penetrates the organic market and the ups and downs for that, please stay here with me. We've got Matt and Regina on the line, and we're talking about everything organic. We'll be right back.
In the mid-Tucson summer, you would expect it to be over 100 degrees. But deep beneath the University of Arizona's compost heap, temperatures can hit 160. Started by the Compost Cats student group, the U of A Compost Project is collecting tons of waste from around campus and keeping it out of landfills. Gathering garbage and converting it into a useful product for the community? Now that's a hot idea indeed. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
Hi there, this is Mrs. Green. The 2013 VW Jetta TDI is the sedan people love to love. It comes with a zippy turbocharged diesel engine that's 90% cleaner burning than previous diesel engines, and it goes farther on a tank of gas than a Toyota Prius. Chapman Volkswagen has a great selection of Jetta TDIs, so choose yours today at chapmantucson.com or in person at 4646 East 22nd Street in Tucson.
You can always find things around the house to give to Goodwill, but I have a bigger reason to give. A while back, I lost my job and I couldn't even support my family. A lot of people don't know Goodwill can help you find a job, but that's what they did for me. I've had this job for 7 years and I love going to work. You know how they say Goodwill changes lives? Well, it's true. Goodwill needs your donations now more than ever. Please donate today.
Go deep underwater without getting wet. Study bugs like a real scientist. Make your shadow move in colors. These are just three reasons to visit the exciting hands-on new exhibits at the Children's Museum Tucson, the region's only museum just for kids. For 25 years, we've ignited kids' imaginations at the Children's Museum Tucson. That's something to celebrate. And admission is only $2 on the first Sunday and on the 25th of each month this whole year. Children's Museum Tucson, where imagination and learning connect.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think, we just want you to. And today we are thinking organic, organic purchasing, organic farming, changing our thought patterns about buying organic. And I am so pleased to have as my guest today Regina Beidler, who's a longtime farmer owner for Organic Valley, and she is also the East Coast Specialist for Farmers in Marketing. And we are going to talk about that in a little bit and the importance of that. And also Matthew. Okay, Matthew, I'm going to try it again. Shenhua.
Chouanier.
I mean, it's French, and that is the language that I just don't get. I had Latin and Spanish. Chouanier. Is that good?
That's perfect.
That's okay. Thanks a lot. And Matthew is the winner of a recipient of Annie's Sustainable Agriculture Scholarship, and is also, his family is the member of the co-op, and he is a member of Organic Valley's Generation Organic Program. So we were talking about the value that people put on organic and changing the mindset a little bit about that. Can you, one of the things I'd love to talk to you both about, because I think it's a topic our listeners want to hear, to me that it's a double-edged sword when a Walmart comes to town. On the one hand, people can say, well, if they buy organic, it's going to make it affordable. And then what Mrs. Green says is, on the other hand, at what cost to the supplier? Like, what is and I'm it's my show, so I can say it. What is Walmart doing to grind the seller to get those prices down? And that may not be true. That may be very unfair of me. So can you both kind of comment on that a little bit?
Sure. I think that organic often has the misperception that it's something only for people of a certain economic status, that it's an elite type of food that's only for certain people to buy. So I think in some senses, although I'm not an ardent Walmart shopper myself, I see that as an access point for people who may not go looking for organic in other ways. And I think there is some concern. I think Walmart does tend to have a philosophy of trying to push the price down of the things that they purvey so that they can offer less expensive prices to their consumers. I'd say from Organic Valley's perspective, something that we've been very clear about with anyone who buys our products is that we have a set price that our products are going to cost. That's a reflection of how much it costs the farmers to produce it. And since farmers are paid first at our co-op, we're not going to do heavy discounting in order to get a lot of food into Walmart. So there's been some understanding of that. And, you know, Walmart in some ways is trying to make some movement as well around their sustainability programs. So for whatever that is worth, I think that Organic Valley has a good stance in our relationship with any food we sell through Walmart. And because of that, I don't have strong feelings against Walmart, but I think it is an interesting trend to watch how many people buy food, because I understand Walmart is actually the largest purveyor of organic food in the country.
So that's a really, you're right. It's people ask me my opinion, and my answer for many things now after doing this for almost 6 years is, well, it's complicated. I don't want
right.
to sound like a politician, but it's complicated. Matt, where do you weigh in on that? Because I'm certainly sure you have an opinion. You're bright. You grew up around the conversation. What's your view on that?
Well, I don't really know too much about the whole business aspect between Organic Valley and big companies. But I do think that it's very important that that the consumer is exposed to the product, at least, not knowing too much about the prices and the politics of it. I think that one of the great things about organic is that it's really healthy for you. And one of my reasons for wanting to pursue organics is to create a healthier society. Price is very important, I think, but I want to make sure that a lot of people have access to really healthy food.
You know, it does lead to the next question I had for both of you. What, Regina, again, on something that you wrote on the page of Organic Valley, the farm page, I love it. I mean, the title of the show is I Am Your Farmer, and to me, that makes it very clear to people what this show is about. And I don't know if it was you or your husband wrote, sustainability is a word we all hear often. For us, it's a word that begs us to determine how to live and farm in a way that will support not only in the short term, but also for generations to come. And Matt, when I asked you what you are a stand for, I think you said sustainability, you know, working on inefficient practices. So what is your thought on sustainability, Regina? And then Matt, I'd love you to answer too.
I think sustainability is something that's is always something that we're working towards. I think organic production practices in a lot of ways address some of the issues around declining fossil fuel supplies and energy usage and a lot of the things that we're concerned about, water usage. And so I think that because our systems are very much focused around grazing our cows, and we're also actually seeing quite a lot of benefits around climate change, too, and around carbon sequestration through organic practices. So I think there's a lot of very positive things that we've already been showing with organic production. I'll say from a personal perspective, it's something when we started farming, we decided what are the values that we want to have for our farming and how do we measure each of our decisions against those values? And what are the pieces that we haven't yet gotten to a place that we feel are sustainable that we want to work on? So, for instance, this fall, we're putting a solar array up here at the farm that will meet our energy needs here. And it's a system and a program that actually allows us to produce enough that my parents who live in town can also benefit from the energy we're producing. So there's bits and pieces that we're always working on. And much like farm work, I think there's always a few pieces ahead of us, but that keeps us motivated to keep going.
Okay, Matt, what about you?
All right, well, in my essay I wrote that I've learned to define sustainability as a system that works through the good times and the bad, something that can push through the hard times successfully while all else around it fails. And that's more like the systematic sustainability, I think, where you learn to make use of your byproducts and waste. One big example of that is like farm manure. A lot of farmers have learned to use that, and they use it as fertilizer. But one thing that a lot of farmers may just they ship off are bull calves. They can be used as steer. They can be used for a lot of other things where it can help your farm income, whereas before it would be just considered a waste. So I think a lot of on-farm efficiencies. Try and get your farm off of grain. The grain man he can help you, but he's also very expensive.
So how do you get your off of grain? What are some of the options for the city folks that will say, well, how do you do that?
Well, it's actually a better alternative, I think, and that's grass-fed.
Right.
With grass-fed, it's a lot more omega-3 fats, which is a lot more healthier for you than omega-6, which is in a lot of grains. It's more of like it's a high-energy fat instead of something that bears might eat before hibernation, something hard to burn. But also, it can help reduce your carbon footprint because you don't have to go out and harvest that crop. You don't have to cultivate it. You don't have to plant it. You can just send your cows out to pasture, and they do the harvesting themselves.
And you know,
it's an interesting trend, actually, within our co-op, because as Matt noted, although grazing is the center point of what organic farmers do, a good deal of organic farmers feed a small amount of supplemental grain. And so as that cost has gone up and up as well, farmers are looking more closely at what happens when you either diminish it really significantly or you take grain away entirely, and that takes a period of years to really do that well. But farmers are discovering that there are ways to farm with less grain feeding and focusing more on the cows getting their feed needs met by pasture and the hay that they're eating.
You know, for both of you, I would love, in either no particular order, Matt or Regina, chime in and join this very deep question I have, I believe. I went to the Sustainable Foods Conference in Monterey. It was at the Monterey Bay Aquarium, and it was sponsored by Seafood Watch. And the conversation for 3 days really centered around how are we going to move forward and create a sustainable food supply for a population of 7 billion. And of course, a major protein source for the world is from the oceans, and there are major dead zones in the oceans. I also have hope for that because of some of the people I met. But in terms of feeding the masses, is organic farming viable? Is it going to be able to create the mass of, you know, the demand, the supply for the demand that is going to be ever increasing? What are your views on that?
I think there's a very strong yes to that, and I think it's already happening. We know that over 80% of the world's food is already produced by farmers on very, very small acreages of only a couple of acres. So, we're already looking at very small production plots. I heard a presentation a couple of years ago that talked about down in South America that there are 60 million acres of soybeans that are grown as cattle feed for export that's largely sent to our country here to feed to cows. So I think we need to look really carefully, first of all, what are farmers planting and what is that food being used for? Is it being used for people or is it being used as a crop either for animals or for energy or for other things? And what we're seeing, again, in terms of organic methods is we see soils that are able to sequester carbon, which is a positive around climate change. We see soils that can manage water when it rains too much or hold water when it rains too little. And we're also seeing an appropriate technology level when we're looking outside of our country. Our family was lucky to spend some time working in Chad and Bangladesh as agricultural volunteers. And organic farming practices make a great deal of sense because the kinds of things that you use for inputs and the types of farming methods you use are very much in line with the kind of level of technology that most farmers in developing countries are using.
Matt, you want to weigh in on that? Because if not, I have another question for you that I think is a perfect segue.
I might try that other question because Regina covered quite a bit.
She did. She really did. And Regina, I just want to press pause because when you're giving answers like that, that's what gives me hope for the future. And I believe you. I totally believe you. I see the growth in this area. I see that the Organic Valley is such, to me, an icon because they are United We Stand, and they're helping all the little guys get together and make it work. So, Matt, one of the things that I know you believe in strongly is supporting, buying, purchasing, thinking local. And talk about that. That's one of the things that you said to me yesterday, just we have to think about buying more things locally. I mean, farmers markets, I think there's like 15 in Tucson. Maybe 5 years ago, there were four. They're springing up everywhere. Little ones, big ones, amazing things happening with partnerships with restaurants. So talk about your passion for buying locally.
Well, I think it makes perfect sense. When you talk about the local economy, when you buy local, that money you spend on local farmers, it stays in that community. If you spend a lot of money in like big stores like Costco or Walmart, we have Hannaford's around here, a very small portion of that money actually stays in the community, but with wages that are paid to the employees. The rest are getting shipped out to large factory farms out in the Midwest, large beef productions, and that doesn't help the local economy at all. So I think one of the huge benefits of buying local is supporting the local economy. You support your local farmers, and also you can, by buying local, you have that opportunity to choose which farmers you support. Because if within like a certain radius, you can go visit that farmer, you can ask the farmer personally what practices they have, and if you don't like their practices, you don't have to support them. It gives you total control over what you're actually putting into your body and total knowledge, which I think is like very important.
And once you buy a tomato that's locally grown, you never go back to Safeway. That's what I can tell
you. Well, also, it's just so fresh. Like,
it's so fresh.
You know, it doesn't have to travel halfway across the country. They don't need to preserve it.
They're not all the same size.
Yeah, exactly.
And same color. You know, we have a great guy, seriously, and his name is Forrest, as in Forrest Gump, and we love him. And towards the end of the growing season here, I start saying, Forrest, how many more weeks are we going to get tomatoes? Because he knows me, and sometimes he puts a little thing under the counter for us if he made some special jam or whatever for his regulars. And it's just, I know that I won't be eating tomatoes until they're back in season, and that's okay. There's other things to eat. So that's a little sidebar on my part. Regina, one of the things that you're responsible for, which makes so much sense to me, is farmers in marketing. The best sellers, it has to be the best people to talk about farming and is farmers and how do they build a relationship between the consumers and the retailers. What's your role in that and as part of Organic Valley Co-op, correct?
Yes, absolutely. The Farmers and Marketing Program at Organic Valley started about 10 years ago, and it was the same kind of epiphany that you just described. One of our marketing people was at an event, and she said, I realized that they didn't want to talk to me. They want to talk to a farmer. People want to talk directly with people who are producing the food and figure out and be able to ask questions about what it's like to be a farmer and what organic farming practices are all about. And I think to get reassurance directly from the source that the food is coming from. So from that beginning, we formed this program, and now there's a lot of different ways in which farmers and our co-op can be involved in marketing efforts. Something as simple as connecting with their local co-op store or their local grocery store to put a local farmer face to the co-op to show that, you know, that we're owners of this co-op and this is our connection to it. Some people will host field days or events at their farm and have Organic Valley product there or donate something to a local event in their community. And then we have other farmers who will go to do retail education or go to a consumer event or hold a farm tour for a group of retailers. And that's, again, a way to connect people on the consumer retailer side to farmers to be able to have conversation.
And you're right. It just makes so much sense because that's who they want to talk to. When I go to the farmer's market, I want to talk to the guy that grew it. And we bought tomatoes the other day, and they were from the same vine, he said. And they were like Matt's eggs. They were different colors. They were different shapes. And he said they all came from the same one because that's how it grows naturally. So we're going to have to take another break and quickly. But when we come back, I'd like to talk with both of you about what do you think the future farmer of America looks like in the sense to survival and surviving the Monsantos of the world? And then I'd like to talk to you about the role that social media is going to play and is playing, because there's lots of active social media going on, Matt, especially on your page. It cracked me up. So please stay here with me, everybody. We're going to come back and talk about more about organic and about social media and about a really bright future for all of us. And stay here with us because you won't want to miss the last part of the show.
Join us for a new Mrs. Green's World episode every Saturday at 12 noon Arizona time at MrsGreensWorld.com. All of our past shows are available as on-demand podcasts at MrsGreensWorld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. Mrs. Green's World is a proud member of the Dream Vision 7 and Castle Rock Radio Networks. If you have questions about the show, write to us at info@MrsGreensWorld.com. We'd love to hear from you. More Mrs. Green's World next.
Hi, I'm Abbott Taylor. With over 35 years creating jewelry in Tucson, no one has more experience in designing and making diamond jewelry in Tucson than Abbott Taylor Jewelers. Please come in and see some of the thousands of designs we have created, or come in and have us design something original just for you. Whether you're looking for a simple and stylish graduation gift, your engagement ring, or a breathtaking jewelry piece to celebrate an important birthday or anniversary, you can't beat our competitive diamond pricing. With 100% trade-up guaranteed, set in an Abbott Taylor jewelry design, always using earth-friendly recycled gold. Abbott Taylor Jewelers, exquisite jewelry designs and exceptional diamond deals created right here in Tucson for over 35 years. Abbott Taylor Jewelers at 6383 East Grant Road, on Facebook and on the web at atdiamonds.com. Diamond designs for everyone. Abbott Taylor Jewelers.
It's got advanced technology. It's got major breakthroughs in technology everywhere you look. It's the 2013 Honda Accord. Hi there, this is Mrs. Green, and I want to share with you that after nearly 40 years of heritage, this is the most stunning Accord ever. The highly respected Automotive Magazine raves that the 2013 Honda Accord offers unparalleled talent of goodness. Please visit Chapman Honda at 4646 East 22nd Street in Tucson to check it out and see for yourself.
Do you dare to share? In 2009, the University of Arizona started its car sharing program. Today, students, faculty, and staff have access to a shared fleet of cars that includes 7 hybrids and even the zero-emissions Nissan Leaf. Not only does car sharing give the campus community wheels, but it takes all those extra cars off the road, too. Now that greens things up, doesn't it? The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
Did you know that even a donated doorknob can help Habitat for Humanity? Habitat's Habastore accepts donated items like furniture, building materials, and appliances. Donations come from commercial builders, malls, restaurants, hotels, and individuals like you. Then, items are bought by bargain hunters who come across the very things they are looking for, just like the right doorknob. The best part is that Habastore sales generate funds for building homes. Call 520-889-7200 or visit HabitatTucson.org.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think, we just want you to. And I certainly know you'll agree with me that we are getting a lot to think about today. My two wonderful guests are Regina Beidler. She's a longtime farmer owner for Organic Valley, and Matt Schwanier. How's that, Matt?
Very good.
Was that good? Schwanier, recipient of a $10,000 Annie Sustainable Agriculture Scholarship and a member of Organics Valley's Generation Organic Program. And, you know, I do want to talk about what you see the future farmer of America looking like, but I also wanted to ask you both about something that was in my newsletter in the past couple of weeks about the disconnect that I believe a lot of us have, and I was one of them, and I'm changing because of my role as Mrs. Green, between the what happens to animals in their journey to feeding, you know, kind of the farm to fork. What's the disconnect? I mean, there's a lot of things now with transparency and social media coming out about the cruelty towards especially pigs and cows and chickens. What's the disconnect? And I mean, I know that's not an issue because you guys love your animals. It's so clear. There's no question. It's what they're being raised to do, and it's in a very sacred way. So can you just weigh in on that a little bit, each one of you?
Sure. A couple of years ago, it was so interesting. I think a lot of people were having a chance to see the movie Food, Inc.
Right.
Because it seemed like a lot of the conversations I were having started with the sentence, so I saw Food, Inc., and one of the things that has really stayed with me about that film wasn't so much the surprise of what I was seeing in the movie, but the way they described that there's a veil between the production of agriculture in the United States and the consumption of the food that's coming from that agriculture. And because that veil is in place, you know, people are not always aware of the kinds of situations or conditions that farms are producing their food in. And I've commented, too, that it's not because farmers are evil or they're trying to do something wrong. It's more of a reflection of how little a lot of farmers are paid to produce some of the food that we're eating and some of the systems that they've had to put into place in order to try to make that work, even though it's not working very well for them. So I think as people are tuning into those kind of situations and understanding, especially around animal situations where there's you know, for pigs and chickens and eggs, those types of things, people are more alert to how some of those things may be produced, and they're making choices, again, based on what they would like to see and are willing to pay for a production system that supports the choices they would like to see.
What about you, Matt?
Yeah, I think once the farm gets to be a certain size, it becomes very difficult for them
right.
to treat the animals on an animal by animal basis. Like the animals aren't individuals anymore, they're more of business pieces. And I think since in the conventional world, farmers are getting paid so little that they have to become massively sized in order to just pay some bills and keep the operation going. And I think with that veil in between the consumer and the producer, it allows the producer to get away with some things that the consumer may not approve of.
And it really goes back to what you talked to me about yesterday. If people are buying locally, there's three major suppliers of meat at our farmers markets. I know where their farms are. You know what I mean? We can just drive there and see it. There's not any massive cruelty going on. And yet you both make the point that people have to make a living, and when the numbers become so great, you don't have names for all your cows. It's not sustainable. You can't do it. So here's, to me, a very interesting question, and I say it kind of with a big grin on my face. I am an environmental educator. One of the pieces for that is my radio show. But integrating the message of environmental practices and sustainability, I have to use social media all the time. And I was thinking about what you both face on a daily basis. You, Regina, in terms of your family and the list that never ends. And you, Matt, in terms of being a student, going off to college, still being a part of, the family farm. What in heaven's name are you going to do about social media? Because it does help raise the awareness. Is that one of the values of Organic Co-op? Because they do a really good job, Organic Valley Co-op.
Yes, I am smiling myself just because I have a 15-year-old daughter who is a social media expert. I think generationally, I'm in my mid-40s, that we have a somewhat tentative relationship, many of us my age, with social media.
And I'm 62.
I have a Facebook account that I look at about once a week.
Yeah.
But I certainly see a younger generation, and I see how the communication works, and I see the outreach and the connections and the links that are made and the information that's exchanged. And I see the power of even, the simplest of images of what happens on farms and how powerful that is in communicating through those mediums. So I have a strong belief in them. And so I defer completely to Matt, who I'm sure is much more savvy about social media than I am.
So go ahead, Matt. You are our future.
Yeah, well, I know on our farm, we have a farm store, and we sell eggs, we sell hamburg, pork, chicken. And I definitely use social media quite a bit to get the word out there. Like, we have a new meat shipment in. Or price lists, or just like farm photos, and that's gotten us a lot of business. Social media has really been an easy way to spread the word of organic and what our farm does and what we have to offer to people who are always on the computer. And I think it doesn't cost us anything, so it's a great way of advertisement.
So what's your most effective medium? Is it Twitter or is it Facebook? What do you use that gets people to know? And do you use hashtags to let them know organic? And if I go to another city, I'll put good Mexican food, help me out, hashtag, Washington, D.C. And people answer you.
Huh. Well, I'm not a hashtagger myself. I don't really.
Okay. You have followers?
I don't do Twitter. Twitter's not my thing. I'm more of a Facebook guy.
Okay.
And I have our Facebook page that I haven't been very good about updating lately, but that's what I use more to connect. We have a farm email and a farm website on Google Sites, but definitely my main tool is Facebook. So that's what I'm on, and that's what I know the best.
And
that's what a lot of other people
you.
Are on. It's working very well.
It's working
yeah,
for
but
you.
I still think overall the best media we have is mouth to mouth. A lot of people just hear about us word of mouth. We have some local businesses that buy some products from us. People ask where you got this. They tell them, they come to our farm store, they love it, they tell other people. And eventually the word spreads pretty fast. And I think that's been definitely the most effective way of marketing for us.
To me it speaks volumes of being part of a community, even in a city the size of Tucson. When you go to Safeway, which is one of our big, grocery stores, people get their carts, they go up and down the aisle, not purposely, but pretty much avoid eye contact. When you go to the farmer's market, you have to plan a couple of hours because you're looking at the cute kids, you're seeing people that you know, you get to know the suppliers. So it becomes much more a part of a community, and that's how the word spreads. A friend of mine told me the other day that she gets eggs from her neighbor, and all the neighbor does is put this sign in her window. If she has eggs, it doesn't say, I've got eggs. There's about six of them in the neighborhood that know that she's got eggs, and she puts this little purple sign in the window that, you can go knock, and she sells them eggs for $2 a dozen. And I think that's part of the joy of having a community that connects through our food. I think it's wonderful. So let's go we don't have a lot of time left. For both of you, and I don't know if this is fair or if I've giving you enough of a heads up, From your perspective, Regina, what are some of the biggest challenges? That would be one of the questions that you see in the not too distant future for organic farmers. Or do you really just see mostly good things? That's a good answer for me too. What's your crystal ball for the next 5 to 10 years?
Well, I would say that if history is any indication, the marketplace continues to grow for organic food consumption, which for our co-op is good news, because as there continues to be more growth in demand, then we're also going to have more farmers who are going to be able to come over to organic production and have a market through our co-op. I think some of the big challenges that we look at organic farming right now, we haven't talked at all about GMOs or genetically modified organisms, but a big change that did come about recently is for many years organic farmers have figured out how to coexist with organic corn and soybeans, sometimes not very easily, but there have been ways that we've been able to do that. But recently, the USDA gave approval to the release of planting GMO alfalfa. And alfalfa is something that a lot of farmers will plant in their hay fields. It's a really important crop for organic farmers. But the difference between that and corn or soybeans is that it's bee pollinated, and all of us know that bees can fly several miles. So it's very hard to protect a non-GMO variety of alfalfa from a GMO variety just because bees travel. And so that's something that in Vermont hasn't become an issue yet, but something that a lot of organic farms are looking at. And the ability for organic farms to coexist and to be able to say definitively, not only are we not planting GMOs, but we're not having any contamination, is something that we're working really hard on, because that's something that's important to organic farmers.
Yeah, and I think we're always going to put a wall up. Yeah, it's daunting.
As we talk about sustainability too, I think that it's always going to be something that we're working towards, and there's always going to be more things to do. But I see a lot of opportunity in organic agriculture.
You give me hope, Matt. You're the young eyes of the future. We're looking at you. What's in your crystal ball?
I think the future of organics and the future of farming. I think the future of farming is definitely organic. Because for one, I've seen a lot of farms go out of business around here lately, but I haven't seen one organic farm go out of business. So I think because the conventional farming world, like the prices are up and down, it's inconsistent, they're not getting a fair price. And with all the fertilizer that they need to put on and chemicals that they need to use, they're almost in a backward spiral, because that as like different bugs become more and more resistant to their penicillin, they lose more and more animals, and they have to use more and more. And just it's a slippery slope, I think. And I think that more people are going to catch on to the idea that organics is stable. It's a stable market. It's a growing market, and it's a good way to support a family, and it's a healthy lifestyle. So I think organic is definitely going to be the farming method of the future, and I think also buying local is really picking up, because I've noticed around here, especially, that farmers markets, like where they weren't too popular in the past, they're popping up left and right, and they're really becoming more popular. And we've picked up a lot of consumers in our farm store that have never bought local, and they're seeing the benefits, and they're really encouraging their friends too. So I think it's an ever-growing trend, and I think that's where the future is heading.
Well, I'm telling you, this is a great show for me. We have about 2 minutes left, and I want to say a shout-out for our guest that's going to be on next week, because she's doing her part in the world to make it a greener place. Her name is Marissa Feinberg. She's the co-founder of Green Spaces, New York City and Denver's they're the go-to co-working spaces for some of the coolest companies in the world. She's a thought leader, an innovator, an entrepreneur, and she's changing the world in every way that she can to make it healthier and a more sustainable one. It's another show that you won't want to miss. You guys, really quickly, tell people the way that they could get in touch with you. We have about 1 minute. Matt, how did those people, I don't even know how I found those videos of your family that are so cool. How can they find them?
Just tinker around stonyfield.com. That's where a lot of our farm cam videos are.
Okay, Stonyfield. Great.
Stonyfield.com. That's where we are. I don't think we have anything on Organic Valley, but you can also find us on Facebook too.
Okay, that's great. And Regina, I know you can find your family farm on the Organic Valley farm page. Who is your farmer?
Yes.
Right?
It's organicvalley.coop, and there's two really neat features. One is you can look regionally at farms, and they have farm stories and pictures. And there's also a place to enter your zip code, and you can see which farms Organic Valley farmer owners live closest to you.
That's the call to action. That's a great call to action. Put in your zip code and find out who is your farmer. You guys, thank you so much for being a part of this and for what you're doing for the planet, for our health, and for the health of all the kids that are going to come after us. Make it a great green day, everybody, and thanks for being a part of Mrs. Green's World.